The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Klapo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish, along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. I am Dr. Josh Klapo, and today we are talking about something that is so critical in an organization, and nobody really wants to talk about it. And I was going to start, Alex, by saying names of songs. I'm not going to, just to sort of set it up. Bruce Hornsby, The Way It Is. Genesis, Misunderstanding. REO Speedwagon, Time for Me to Fly. And Journey, the classic, Party's Over. What do you, when you,
heavy, yeah, man.
I know, but we got to do this one. This is the proverbial leader. And when I say leader, you know, this is not just the CEO. And in fact, hopefully we'll get into this. This is not just the CEO. This is how do you have the really tough conversations with your employees, whether that is letting them go, whether that is a demotion, whether that's a reassignment, or as you and I have talked about in an earlier show, whether that's saying, you know, you're not really good at this. And, you know, you've been in this industry a long time, and so have I. We've seen, we've probably both seen it done very wrong. We've both seen it done very right. And so just, I don't know, what's your experience been just in what you've observed over the years with leaders having the super tough one-on-one conversations? It's one thing to say we didn't meet our numbers. I mean, that's one, but to sort of be able to talk to people about tough topics. What's your experience been?
So I think we should title this episode, you know, Why Leadership Sucks.
Yes,
because,
that's great.
Because this is the hardest part. This is one of the hardest things to do as a leader, is to give people, you know, negative feedback. And you're right. It can be in the form of, hey, you need to improve this. Those conversations aren't that hard usually. But then you get into these conversations of, you know, you just suck at this, right? You need to go do something different. And then I think even the hardest kind of conversations are the ones where, you know, you have to let people go that you really like and you really respect their talents, but there are factors beyond your control where you have to say, look, we either can't afford to pay for a position like yours, or we're having to make cutbacks or whatever. Those are really hard conversations. And, you know, it's interesting. I was reading an interview this weekend. It was kind of an older interview with Sting, and sort of the topic was on this idea of, you know, he left the police to do this solo career, and the topic was something like, you know, would he have gone back to the police if his solo career hadn't panned out, right? And they interviewed him and they said, well, you know, why did you kind of branch off on your own? And, you know, he gave a lot of reasons for it. But one of the reasons that he gave for it was, he said, look, it's really hard to be in a band where everybody's writing music. And this sounds a little bit arrogant, but he said, you know, it's hard to tell your fellow bandmates that their music just isn't very good. It's not as good as the stuff you're writing. And he said, you know, and he said after a while, after a few albums of doing this, it was so hard. Like he didn't want to have those conversations anymore. He just said, screw it, man. I'm going to go out on my own. I'm going to write all the music. I'm going to be ultimately responsible for doing it all. And it was all because of those, or at least partially because those difficult conversations he had to have with Andy Summers and with Stuart Copeland. Like, yeah, guys, you know, you're good musicians and stuff, but you suck at writing music, basically. And at least popular music.
Well, no. So listen, so that one, and we weren't there for the conversations, but I think that one is really interesting because it's one thing to not have the conversations. Right. Then I see this all the time. The employees whose performance over the years have, you know, in their performance evaluations have been, you know, meeting or exceeding. And it's usually just meeting. And it goes on and on and on, and they get their bonuses because everybody's getting bonuses. And as far as they know, at least on paper, they're doing okay. And then someplace down the line, someone decides to be, and I hate this, Alex, I hate this term, quote, brutally honest, and A, tell them that they actually haven't been doing good for 10 years, right? And that they're, you know, we're considering going in another direction. And I mean, that psychologically, that is the worst thing you can do. At least with Sting, if he was having these conversations, you know, it was kind of like over and over again, guys, this is not really what I think is good. And it's almost like a relationship where there's open communication, but you come to this place where you say, it's time for me to fly. It's not a secret, but there are so many leaders at every level of an organization that will never do that. It's like they just will not go there because they're afraid. They're afraid that it's going to affect employee morale, et cetera. And then they can somebody, or differently, they don't, you know, 10 years down the line, they don't get the performance bonus. And the person's like, what the hell happened? Like, what happened? And because they didn't have those conversations.
Yeah. Well, you know, humans want to avoid conflict.
Mostly, of course.
Right. You're right.
Of course.
These conversations don't happen, I think, with the frequency and the regularity that they need to happen. And I'll tell you, it goes beyond just the organization, though. You know, I spent a lot of my life in consulting and you know, you've done this mm-hmm. as well. Right. And some of the hardest conversations you have to have, some of the most quote unquote brutally honest conversations you have to have are with your customers.
Yep.
You know, I've had plenty of consulting gigs where I've gone in, assessed the situation, said, you know, guys, here's what you need to do. And they said, we're not sure. And, you know, at some point you have to have a conversation with them like, you know, guys, if you knew what the hell you were doing, you wouldn't have hired me. So shut up and do what I'm telling you to do. Right. You have to be more polite than that. But at the end of the day, that's a hard conversation to have with someone who's paying your paycheck. And being able to say, guys,
that's where this whole thing gets super interesting because of all of the psychological or social parameters and influences, what you just said, you're the consultant. They've brought you in to tell them, you know, what you see, they're paying your paycheck. And, you know, and I know you've had consulting gigs this way. I have too. Sometimes you're brought in because they really want to know. Sometimes you're brought in because they want you to say it's not that bad or it's really what I thought anyway. And, yeah, you know, those are two very different consulting arrangements. And to be honest with you, I one of them is an easy conversation. One of them is not. And I just, I think one of the things that I've noticed a lot is in the attempt to avoid conflict, there is the physical avoidance. And if you're a leader in an organization, it's actually easy, right? You get someone else to tell them. If you're, you know, below you, if you're CEO, you have an EVP, and the EVP tells the SVP, and the SVP tells the VP, and the VP tells the director, and the director tells the manager, and then the poor manager is left with feeding the news, or sometimes, you know, they pull in HR. I don't know about you. I'll call any leader out on that. That shows me that you don't have courage at all. The second thing I've seen is, and I've literally seen this, where CEOs or leaders will say, well, the best way to have a difficult conversation is make sure you don't schedule anything more than 15, like make sure you have a hard stop after 15 minutes.
Oh, that's the worst.
And that's so, what's the word? It's smarmy. Like I can't think of a better, right? It's smarmy. It's childish, but like you've seen it. It happens. I would say it happens more times than not because they don't want to be in that position, even if they're, you know, even if you look at the leader and you say they're really not nice people, I would say they don't want to be in that position because they don't want to hurt somebody's feelings because they don't want to feel they don't want to feel what it feels like to hurt someone's feelings.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the tough part. And I think, it's been a little bit easier, I think, on people with, over the last couple of years, because everybody's been, or a lot of people have been working remotely and having these conversations over a Zoom call or on the telephone, they tend to be a lot easier, I think, from a mental standpoint for people to have those conversations than if you're doing them face to face.
Yeah.
And you can see the physical reaction.
Right.
Body language and all that. It's so uncomfortable for everyone.
have you worked with leaders, organizations where, you don't have to name them, but where you've seen a leader who was super compassionate, but also considered a really good leader? Because we see this a lot. I'm going to get political. I was just thinking about it. Jimmy Carter was a great example. Right. They said he was a terrible president, but he was, a heart of gold guy. Right. Just an amazing human being. And obviously we've seen the work that he's done afterwards. But have you seen organizations where you can have a super decisive, strategic and maybe also execution, difficult conversation, but super nice and super compassionate? Have you met leaders like that?
Yeah, no, I have. And there's always this trick in leadership, and I think it's particularly true in, when you get down to either a small company or you get into a division or group within a larger company, mm-hmm. is that, you kind of build up these relationships with people, and they're not purely professional relationships, right? They're not just, let's go do our job, but you'll go on the road with people and you'll have dinner with them and you'll learn about their families and their kids and their dog or whatever. And so you do end up in a situation where there is some degree of, personal knowledge of people's lives and everything else. And I think that's when, you have to strike a fine line between, being objective as a leader, but also recognizing the subjective characteristics of literally everybody that works in your company. Everyone has a life. Everybody has something that they're doing in their lives. And being able to strike that balance between being able to give objective feedback to people and do it in a way that doesn't, that doesn't offend them. So I think there's some good techniques for doing that. I think whenever you have to give feedback, I try to base everything when I have to do this, I have to base everything on facts. And I think that's really important. It's not just, hey, I don't like you, or, you're just lazy, or, you got to get into specifics, right? Otherwise, the conversation turns into an assault on that person and their individual characteristics. So you got to focus on, look, here's the situation, Dr. Josh, we were going to do this, you had this part for that you needed to execute on. I don't think you executed on it as well as you could have. I'm not pleased about that, but here are some things I think you can do going forward to do a better job of it. So kind of turn the conversation from an attack, if you will, even though you're probably not intending it that way anyway, but turn it from an attack into look, this is a coaching session, right? This is, I'm giving you some feedback on how to get better at what you do, as opposed to saying there are intrinsic characteristics that you have as a person that have caused this particular outcome or whatever. So I think you have to divorce those two things, right? So it's not a personal personal assault, if you will. And I think the same thing's true in the consulting world, like we talked about, being able to go out and say to your clients, look, you hired me for a reason here. I'm giving you my objective feedback on these things. I'd love to discuss it with you, even if you don't want to hear the recommendations that I'm recommending to you. Let's talk through them and let's do it in a very objective way. Let's focus on the facts of the matter. And so it doesn't turn into a personal thing. So I think that's one piece to it for sure.
So I think one of the things that's really interesting, you've described it, but you've also described the challenge is you need to stay when you're giving this feedback, and I'm not just talking about letting people go, right? I mean, that's really hard. It's not easy for anybody, but even when it's performance feedback, I like your idea of, you know, you do need to stay as objective as you can. I was just thinking there's the Center for Creative Leadership has this sort of acronym, or this, it's called the SBI model, situation, behavior, impact. And the reason I really like it is it frames up for people kind of what you're supposed to do when you're trying to give difficult, maybe negative feedback. And the idea follows what you said. You describe the situation. We were in this meeting, or you were in this meeting. What was the behavior? You know, you said this and you said this and you said this, and then you looked away and you threw your papers up in the air. What was the impact?
Yeah.
Well, it sent the message that our team wasn't, prepared. It sent the message that you were frustrated. Let's talk about those three things. So it's really this framing up, which is absolutely critical. But the second thing that you said, which I think is infinitely difficult as a human being, you use the word sort of this idea of divorcing your personal likes or dislikes, if you will, for the person, and really focusing on the facts, which I agree with. I agree with completely. The problem is, what I see is that leads to leaders who in the moment are not able to be compassionate. Because they've done it. You hear this all the time. Well, we just shut the emotions off. You know, we shut the emotions off. Well, as soon as you shut the emotions off, you're sticking with facts, but now you're not taking into consideration that this person's human and they are feeling. And I think that's something that I don't know if you've seen. I've literally seen robots. I've seen leaders go robotic when they're giving negative feedback because of what you just said. We're sticking to the facts.
Oh yeah, and I've done it myself. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, right? I mean, I've had to lay a lot of people off over the last 30 years. And those are really hard conversations. Yeah. And what I found was that I turned into this robot when I did it, right? Yes. And I just stuck to the facts, you know, we're reorganizing or we're downsizing or we're changing direction or whatever. God, it's hard to do. I mean,
how did you feel? I'm going to use you as a use case and you don't do this. No, but I think this is so important. You stuck to the facts because those are both true and safe for you and presumably safe for the person. But if I can ask you this, because I think our listeners would appreciate this. When you did that, if you think back, how were you feeling? Like, what was your emotions as you were doing that?
Oh my God. I mean, it was horrible. First of all, there's the terror of the anticipation of having those conversations, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're even a remotely compassionate person, what's going through your head is, God, this is going to affect this person. It's going to affect this person's family and their children and their whole life. Having that knowledge going into it is just, it's so difficult, right? I mean, you feel horrible. I mean, I remember one time a company I worked for, a really successful company, but we reorganized and we had to get rid of a fair number of people, probably a couple dozen people that worked for me. So I had to do like 20 something of these conversations in a 2-day period.
I've seen.
And I got to tell you, after doing 20 of them, not only was I the most robotic sounding person you've ever seen in your life, but I mean, I felt like hell. Yes. I felt like I had just been through a war or something. I mean, I was exhausted. I was mentally drained. I had so much anxiety over the whole thing that it was terrible. It's a really hard thing to do.
So what you did, see, this is why I think it's important, your experience. You shut down the emotion piece for your own protection. I mean, and that's a natural. We do that. We don't want to feel the bad feelings. And exactly what you said, you're going in to tell somebody who you know it's going to affect their life, et cetera. So you shut that piece down. And particularly if it's repeated trauma, right? Because you had to do it again and again and again. But I think what leaders forget is you can go all robotic on somebody, But to your point, if you are halfway a compassionate person, those feelings don't not exist. They're just coming out. And so what you have is an emotional hangover. That's exactly what you experience, because you were putting so much of it at bay, just out of protection and whatnot, that when you were done, it literally will knock you on your behind. And I think a lot of leaders, they don't know how to thread that needle, right? Because they do exactly what you say. Okay, if I stick to the facts, it'll be less, you know, horrible for them. And frankly, I'll feel better because I'm not letting my I won't cry. I can't cry. I can't shed a tear. Yeah. But to your point, you're letting someone who maybe worked with 20 years go, and you know it's horrible. Let me ask you this question. Do you think it's okay for a leader? When I say leader, it's generic leader. It could be at any level. Is it okay for a leader to let somebody go and be emotional, meaning maybe well up, not on purpose, but it's happening. They actually feel that. Do you think that that's okay or not? This is not a trick question. I'm asking your opinion.
Oh, gosh. So you're saying, is it okay to feel good about it afterwards?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
No. In the moment, you're letting somebody go. You're telling somebody that you're reorg and you're going to have to fire them. And it's breaking your heart, right? A lot of times people would say, don't go there. Stay nice, factual. Yeah. But you find yourself choking up a little bit, right? That's your natural thing. Is it okay, do you think, as a leader, when you're giving that information, to get choked up, to shed a tear? Not to make yourself shed a tear, but if it's happening, is it okay to do that, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think it is, because we're all human and leaders are as human as anybody else in this world. So yeah, do I think it's okay? Yeah, I do think it's okay. And I think sometimes that might even be helpful to the person receiving the bad news to know that. And I always tell people that when I have these difficult conversations, particularly if it's a situation where you're firing somebody or you're laying them off, is that, you know, this isn't a personal thing. This isn't an indictment of who you are as an individual. And going back to what you talked about earlier, you know, this whole idea that behaviors are different than innate characteristics.
Yes.
And so you focus on behaviors, and that's why I like that model that you talked about. Because it's not about, when you're giving critical feedback to people, it's not about who they are as a person, hopefully. It's about their behaviors, because behaviors can be altered. Behaviors can be modified and changed. But it's hard to change people's innate characteristics, right? So it's not, hey, you're a jerk or you're lazy or whatever. You got to focus on the behaviors that they've exhibited and saying, look, we need to change the behaviors in order to be successful. But going back to your question, yeah, I mean, look, I think that is okay. And it happens, and it's happened to me before. You know, I've had to lay off people that I really cared about that were pretty good friends of mine. And it was not fun. It was not, it was very emotional when you get into situations like that.
And you just said it. And I think that's the thing that we forget is it's okay. Leaders get themselves all twisted up in this weird place where it's like we can't be leaders and human at the same time. That's number one. And then number two, to your point, and this gets, we maybe do a whole show on this. There's a difference between, like you said, saying to somebody in a performance evaluation, these are the behaviors that you're doing that are having an impact on the company, et cetera, and we need to correct them. They need to be corrected, or even you've been doing them so long, we can't let you work here. That's different than saying you're lazy, you're stupid, that's shaming. And we know that you start shaming people, it's not any more effective from a motivational standpoint than, in fact, it's far less effective, and particularly if you're not letting them go. I mean, you shame somebody and let them go, they'll hate you for the rest of your life. Shame somebody and you keep them there, you ain't gonna get the productivity that you need. And one of the things that I think is really interesting that you just said, and this one is for me, I have the hardest time wrapping my head around this. You know, a lot of times I will get asked, and I'm sure you get asked because you've done this so much, maybe by a junior employee, how do I make this conversation easy or easier, you know, or I just, there's gotta be a way, there's gotta be a tool, there's gotta be a technique, you know, to make this like not so bad. And, you know, my advice is it is a tough conversation is never easy because it's tough. Like it's supposed to feel, you're supposed to feel bad. Like that's the whole point. It's just
don't make it worse. Yes. And that's okay, right? And think about it, you know, pivoting for a second to the music industry, right? Imagine the bands that had to go fire their guitarist or their drummer or whatever, right? I mean, just think about, like, you started this band with some friends of yours or some guys you met. That's
a great analogy.
Went through and had great success, and then you have to tell one of your band members, hey, dude, you're just not cutting it. You need to leave. And, you know, and musicians, I think, aren't particularly good at these conversations, right? No. They don't have a lot of management and organizational behavior training typically. And so you see these spectacular blowups.
Yes.
In these situations, right? And then they're sniping each other online and saying, no, that guy was a jerk or whatever. And because, you know, as a musician, that's a huge part of your identity, just like it is with any job. But I think it's particularly true as a musician. That is your, you know, that is such a part of who you are that when a band has to go through that, sometimes the bands don't survive as a result of it.
That's right.
Going through those breakups.
Well, and in particular in bands, there's a fewer number of people. So percentage wise, in terms of the loss, it's greater, right? Because it's not 100 people, it's 5 or 7. And the other piece is it's so much more public, and again, I'm talking about maybe headlining bands, but it is, it's more, the organization instantly does not look like it did before. And, you know, I guess in some cases there are non-disclosures and confidentiality things and all those kinds of things, but you're right. You're telling somebody who was maybe 1/3 or 1/4 of this entire organization that we're moving in a different direction. And it's interesting, the bands, because you said there's these huge blowups. See, the blowups, I think, happen because the person you're telling, like the drummer, like they're pissed. You know, like they're pissed. Well, but then they get pissed. And so they're pissed. So the band members get pissed that they're pissed. Right. And this, I see this in yeah, business right, all the time. Right. Well, you don't need to be getting mad. You know, well, of course I'm mad. And well, that's, you know, you're just being a baby about this. And if you really could play, and it goes back and forth. And the most fundamental thing that's happening there is, and this is my, I always give this as my tip to leaders. When you're giving somebody super bad news, i.e. you're out of the band, you owe it to them to allow them to have their emotional reaction. Like you can't tell somebody you're out of the band and then tell them that they can't be upset and then get pissed at them when they are upset.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because I'll relate to you. The only time I've ever been fired from a job, quote unquote, in my life was I was in a high school band, okay? Me and three other guys, we started this band. I played bass. And frankly, I wasn't very good. And I just didn't have the time to devote to it. And so my buddy, you know, kind of took me aside and he said, look, dude, we're going to have to find another bass player. And I got to tell you, man, I was devastated.
Yes.
It was such an emotional reaction to it. Because, you know, I thought, oh my God, I thought I wasn't good enough and I sucked at music and everything else. So you're right. I mean, you have to expect that people are going to get somewhat emotional about it. I certainly did. I mean, I was like, you know, 16 years old or whatever. So I didn't know how to process those emotions very well, but they're there. And, you know, that's part of life. That's part of business. That's part of being in a band. And everything else, you have to expect that people are going to be emotional about things. And you know what? That's okay.
That's what you just said. It's your last statement, Alex. I think if you're going to be a leader and you're going to have to give people bad news, you have to be able to say literally what you just said. I'm giving you this bad news. This is going to change your life, you know, or your situation. I recognize that. You're about to recognize that. And it's okay for you to be upset. And I'm not going to shut that down. And in fact, if it's in a meeting, or even in a virtual meeting, I'm not saying, well, I got a hard stop in 12 minutes. I am going to give you the final gift of allowing you to be upset in my presence with no judgment. And that's like, that's just being human. And if you do that, it doesn't make the conversation easier. It doesn't make the outcome like perfect. But in the end, what happens is you have two humans walking away from each other. Whereas, you know, oh God, I just thought of something. This is not, Alex, this is not Mr. Roboto.
It is not Mr. Roboto, that's for sure.
Okay. Can we end on that? Because that was really
okay.
That was super cheesy. I didn't even think it, and it just came to my mind. We are not Mr. Roboto's or Miss Roboto's. We are human. Actually, there's another song. It's a pop song. Okay, I gotta stop. All right. Everyone, thank you for joining this edition of Adapt or Perish before I go down a terrible rabbit hole. But if you stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, there's going to be another amazing episode with Dr. Hubline and myself of Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation